Welcome to Portal to Ascension Radio. We are a consciousness-raising organization designed to uplift and empower humanity and pave the way so we may usher in a new reality of unity and harmony for all inhabitants on Earth. Our mission is to awaken, inform, educate, and inspire remembrance through exploring deeply esoteric topics, the true and forgotten history of our planet, and our connection to the cosmos. For paradigm-shifting awareness, tune into our YouTube channel at Portal to Ascension. On Portal to Ascension Radio, we feature speaker interviews and presentations featured on our website. Sign up at portaltoascension.org for access to hundreds of hours of our next dimensional content. Now, let's get into today's discussion.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing? This is Neil with Portal to Ascension. Hope you're all doing beautifully today. And today we have an impromptu and exciting stream. And as you can tell, it's called Knights Templar Quest for the Holy Grail and the Dragons. And since we're going live today, this isn't a pre-record. Let's see who's around, who's in the chat. Go ahead and say hi. Let's get some connection going here. So we're going to be bringing on Nan Akasha in a moment, who's a good friend, been on Portal Central multiple times in the last year or so. And I see a bunch of people just joined. Hello, everybody. Go ahead and say hi in the chat. We're also live on Instagram and on Twitter. So welcome, welcome. And we're going to bring on Nan Akasha in a moment. And as I was saying, she's been on Portal Central, I think, over the last year and a half. We've been working together, and our friendship is growing stronger. And I really, really do like and enjoy connecting with Nan. And a few days ago, she messaged me, and we're talking about, you know, going live today. And Nan is actually going to be at our conference in Glastonbury, which is coming up in September. So that's ascensionglastonbury.com. We'll talk about it a little bit later as well. And she's been on many events this year. We have done, she was on our Dragons Conference last year, and we'll be on the Dragons Conference this year. And soft announcement, we're going to do, next year is the Year of the Snake, guys. Year of the Snake next year. So we're going to do on February 2nd, Nan and myself are co-producing a Year of the Snake event, which is going to be pretty interesting. But as you can see, today is a Knights Templar. And I want to give some pre-context, I guess, to this. So where do I start? You know, firstly, let's start at the end, okay? When supposedly I'm just jumping ahead here, you know, but hopefully you guys have some context. So when Nan comes on, she'll bring you hopefully more historical understanding of this. But in the ending of the Knights Templar, right, when they were basically prosecuted and they were executed and thrown in jail and the order collapsed, there were a few reasons why this happened. I believe it was King Philip the fourth, and one of the main reasons that it occurred was the Knights Templar were actually the ones that started what we currently have as the modern day banking system. For a long time, they were the only people in certain countries, besides Masons and other Crusaders, to be able to go from basically land territory to land territory. They had free dominion over Europe. And they were able to travel. And as they were doing that, they started putting up centers all around Europe in which they would hold money. And then they started the whole banking system where people can loan, get loan money. They started a credit system. And in this, many, many elite started borrowing from them. And they became richer than entire kingdoms. They even became richer and had more, not even considering what kind of artifacts, spiritual artifacts they may have had, but they also even had more money than the King of France. And the King of France was trying to fund a war. And as he was funding this war, he became in debt to the Knights Templar. And when it was payable and due was also around the same time that he decided, well, I'm the king, I'm just going to take these guys out. Okay, so that's what we've been told. That's what all the documentaries show. But then you can go a little more deeper here in the esoteric beliefs. And you realize that there was an actual war, if you will, on the Christian kingdom against Christian sects that did not have their same belief systems, right? And there was a connection to, could have been the Mary Magdalene mysteries when it comes to Knights Templar, could have been even the Cathars, because they both coexisted in the south of France during the 12th and the 13th century. And there was not only, you know, the financial aspect that we're told, but they seem to actually have been a war on taking out specific sects that hold deeply esoteric occult belief systems from the ancient past that could have been closer to the truth of what Christianity was. So today we're going to have an exploration and see what we can find out and dive deep and have a good conversation about this. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and bring on Nan.
Hi,
hey,
there.
Nan, welcome.
Thank you.
So where do we start? I would love for you just to kind of, what's your journey with this? You know, before we started here, you were telling me that for a while you did not even really accept the whole Christian worldview, and maybe you pushed it aside because of your upbringing, I'm not sure. And so what was the journey to understanding this? And maybe you can give us some context of why you wanted to have this conversation today.
Yeah, well, one of the things is, you know, we're going to Glastonbury, we're going to Avalon, and there's so much magic there. There's so much history there. There's Neolithic history. There's, you know, medieval history, which is what we're talking about. There's the whole goddess. There's sacred waters. There's dragons, dragon lines, earth energies. And of course, you have the quest. And I was, you know, all in as a child to the quest for the Holy Grail. And then you hear a million different stories about what it is. You know, what really is the grail or the chalice and, you know, all these things. And then the Da Vinci Code comes out. And in essence, really, I was kind of raised neutral religiously. But when I went to college, I was all like, oh, I'm running around telling everybody, yeah, I'm an atheist. I didn't even know why I had to have a title, but that was the phase. And the more I understood about the suppression that a lot of religions have created and what happened, you know, especially with the Roman Catholic Church, with what happened much, you know, way before 1307, when they, you know, coordinated this attack on the Knights Templar. But everybody, it's still, if you go look in Wikipedia, it says that they were knights for the church. It says that their purpose was to protect pilgrims, you know, to go to Jerusalem. And yes, they did that. But like you said, they started a banking system. They started the first navy in the U.S. Their entire purpose was to find information from Atlantis and preserve the wisdom of alchemy, which is transformation, yes, of you to a higher state of consciousness, which is what we've been trying to do since the fall or since the flood. And also, though, they knew that there was information on how to do this. So if you transform gold, you do alchemy with actual gold. The real reason, well, two things. They needed money for the wars, right? Because they were the ones that funded the American Revolution. And their attempt was to, you know, start a country that had these ancient concepts like Atlantis of freedom and equality and working with the elements and understanding stargates and all this kind of thing. And so what I thought was, you know, these jerks, you know, going around and doing all this stuff. And then I started to, you know, get into the goddess world and the Wiccan world and realize that the history of women or sacred feminine, you know, the repression, the suppression, the killing, the burnings, and so on and so forth, and how that was perpetrated by certain parts, especially of the Spanish Inquisition or the church. And so you can go through and see this just like horrific history of why, you know, why. And then to discover that someone that looked like they were the ally of that was actually smart enough to keep their enemies closer, right? Than as close as your friends, and look like and support and help the church in certain aspects so that they had access to information. And they spent all that time in Jerusalem digging in ancient vaults, finding, you know, books and ossuaries and all kinds of stuff. And then they did the same thing in Egypt. You know, they went to Egypt. They started to decipher the temple walls. They realized that all these cultures, even the Maya, were inscripting for us ways to perform alchemy. Why? To fly spaceships. You know, to get around really easy around here or other places, to activate the portals, to create arcs and capacitors and stone circles that actually tap into the energies in the earth and the energies at certain times. And then they can bring the energy together, open portals, star portals, communication. They can channel it through other areas in like where we're going to be in Glastonbury. These circles and, you know, Stonehenge and Avebury and all these different places, they're actually connected. In the ancient times, they had, you know, veins or avenues, if you want, that connected, and they'd channel the energy and they'd move it and keep it and store it. And the Knights Templar has this amazing history of really going out, becoming very wealthy. And what I didn't realize, and I lived in Europe growing up and I loved art. So I know the Notre Dame inside and out. I haven't seen it since the fire. I know it before. And I never realized that encoded on Notre Dame and all these other Catholic churches in France are these same symbols and alchemy and formulas like they, that you would find in Egypt. And yet they did such a good job, to, you know, hiding it and keeping it hidden and then protecting it. And then, as you know, we'll go into, it looked like they were suppressed, but they weren't, you know, that they were ended, that they met their fate, but then they just went underground and became pirates.
Okay, so you said that it looks like they were suppressed, meaning that they were taken out, but you believe the order continued.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And they became, what do you mean pirates, you mean the Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, yeah, like pirates. They were warriors, right? They were very good with science. They were good with, you know, they were well educated. They fought, and a lot of their value as they were, they had the belief, this was the part that really shocked me, the complete opposite of the church, that the dragon, the serpent, the kundalini is a life force that's in everyone. It's a spark that's in you, and it's in you. It's your rights. It's natural. And we see a lot of systems that have said, no, you have to go through me. No, that sacred feminine is bad. No, that intuition is bad. Only be like this. And they did a good job at learning all this knowledge and actually going around the world and meeting all these other cultures with, see, it sounds really crazy, but like with secret handshakes or with certain symbols that they recognized their, the others that were holding the ancient wisdom, like the Native Americans, like the Mayan, like the Egyptians. And so they connected with all these cultures at a level of equality, of believing you are as good as me, instead of I'm here to tell you you're a savage and take your shit and kill you, you know,
right,
which
right.
was the other way of doing things. So,
well, it's very interesting because we hear a lot of their about their rituals, and then we can go a little deeper and we see that there were some initiation rituals and things they were doing that the church considered witchcraft, pagan, you know, which we know is just the ancient ways that they were continuing and passing it down. But when you look at all mainstream documentaries, even though it's kind of like almost like they start by telling you the positive stuff, but it ends up becoming like that these guys were, you know, they were the crusaders. They were going around enforcing Christianity on people and trying to convert them at the sword, you know, things like that. So I feel there is this negative twist to it, but there's this deeper understanding of who they were, and making them blasphemous is probably definitely a misdirection to probably the truth of what they were trying to convey.
Absolutely. Well, it's the easiest. It's still the easiest way to take someone out, ruin their reputation. You don't, you know, it used to be you kill them. Well, you don't need to now, you know, with the culture, with the information, with the cancel culture, you know, with one, you know, one thing, you could be completely proved innocent, but that's never going to leave someone's head. Well, maybe, you never know. And so being called a heretic, you know, in that age was just very bad, because what we were taught was not just certain people are bad, aka women or healers or, you know, people who talk directly to the fairies instead of coming and paying me to get to heaven. You know, it was that you were told to turn in your sister and brother. You were told to look in everyone, there's evil, and that person might be bad. So turn in everybody to us and we'll figure it out. And actually there's records where they would just say, kill everybody and God will figure it out. Well, what if there's some good Christians here? Are there good somebodies here? Oh, well, I don't know. Just kill them all and they'll figure it out when they get to heaven. You know? And so what was interesting was here were these people who were really good at walking that line and understanding something I know I couldn't do, which would be, you know, pretend to be in a certain lifestyle, to be serving something. And at the same time, like things like the Da Vinci Code talked about, you know, they became too powerful, or they were holding secrets that the church didn't like. Like, you know, maybe Mary Magdalene had children. Mary Magdalene had lots of children. She had children from more than just Jesus and John the Baptist. And there's all kinds of stuff that would have been normal in that culture. And so they just twist it and they call you a heretic and they burn one of your relatives or one of your ancestors at the stake. And now people don't forget that. So there's an incredible process, and the idea really is alchemy. It's how do we have access to transformation on our own, from poverty to wealth, from, you know, sickness to health, to go from being a slave to all the fears and everybody else's opinions, to having that direct connection to our soul promise, to our soul blueprint that now starts to wake up right now. Bam, 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 bam. Wake up is like, what? No, this is fireworks right now, right? Like, bam, 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 bam. And so we have an opportunity right now. This isn't going to last forever.
Right. Uh-huh. This is the opportunity. Well, it's not going to last forever because we're going to win. We're going to shift reality. You know what I'm saying? We're going to move into
reality. We're waking up, and desperate people get, you know, people who are desperate to have perceived control over others, right? Is mm-hmm. they're not secure. They have no connection themselves. And they know now they can sense whether they're, you know, they're very wise in a lot of these ways, which a lot of the people who went into more control ways of governing and so on, they were often very well versed in magic and alchemy, yeah, and all that. They knew it. In fact, even like the ancient Mayan and the ancient Egyptian, the priest kings, even in Atlantis, they had to literally be a priest or priestess and a king. They couldn't just be the king. You can't just be a stupid king. You right. were responsible. So, yeah. You had to
know. Merlin wasn't just the warlock. He was probably the teacher of the magical ways.
Well, and Merlin is a title, and it's druids, high priests were called Merlins.
Okay, interesting.
And so what we're looking at is, I know Mary was a particular person, as in Mother Mary, versus mm-hmm. but when you look at goddess line or into feminine, you know, as when it was being cut and burned and stomped on and everything else through all the tales, I mean, even the Greek tales, right? Everything was, because that's the way the energy was going, to have the masculine be in charge, so to speak. Mary was one of the few feminine icons or archetypes that survived, that was allowed to be seen. You could have a, you know, statue of Mary. You could have Guadalupe here. You can go have a Mary ceremony here. I have Aztec friends, and I get invited to some of their family or their community celebrations. And it's a combination of ancient Aztec rituals with it's Mother Mary Day, because it's a conquered culture, right?
I would, it took me a while to get over that, because I'd go to Temescal's and then I thought we'd do some indigenous stuff, and all of a sudden Mother Mary was there.
I know, it's so bizarre, but you realize this is a conquered culture. They spent 450 years here saying, no, 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 be this, do this. And so my Aztec friend invited me to this, and I'm there with my drum ready to be all woo and indigenous and Mother Mary. And then all the women come and like, oh, Mary, moment. And I'm just standing there going, okay, what? And then 5 seconds later, the copal is out and they're doing all this stuff. So, but Mary is like a Merlin. Merlin was the allowed, surviving, iconic archetype of a masculine magician, because they were illegal too. Okay.
Have you heard of Margaret Regal Yoso? I've done a few events with her.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so she's one of my favorite people, and we just did a whole stream on my YouTube channel. Shout out to this stream on the channel, guys, if you want to check it out, called The Secret Teachings of Mother Mary. And you would probably benefit greatly from that one, because it fits with so much of what you're saying here. And she was saying that Mary, even though people were called Mary, it was actually a title given to specific people.
Yes.
And there was an order, and people call it, there's two different orders. I'm still, because it's so lost in history, all I can do is go based on the two people telling me it. But either it's the Order of the Magdalens or it's the Order of the Marys. But
they were different, but they are similar because the one Mary is the icon of the great goddess mother.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it's allowed to be passed down.
Which goes back to Isis as well. The order was there in Egypt. It was thousands of years old before they brought Yeshua into this world.
Yeah. And that's one of the things the Knights Templar understood, was that the Mary, Jesus, Joseph thing was Isis, Horus, and Osiris, and mm-hmm. previous to that. And there's almost like elemental symbols or embodiments of Mary and Jesus and Joseph that then create different alchemical or elemental connections, and that they represented these things. So, but I think that the interesting thing for the Mary is that I love that the secret, yeah, is I kind of did the same thing when I first got into the goddess world and was becoming I was in the Reformed Congregation of the Goddess, and I was on the ritual planning committee, and I'm learning about all these things. And somebody was like, oh, let's, we did a thing every month where we'd get together, someone would pick a goddess, we'd have a craft and food and talk about that goddess. So I was into, pick the goddess. Okay. Morgan Le Fay, Brigid, Athena, whoever. And then someone picked Mary, Mother Mary. And I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. I was like, okay. And I came in, so I was talking to her, and I go, so why? Like, why? And she's like, oh, well, if you don't really know why, you're really going to love this. This was about 27 years ago or so. And I said, I knew she had been raised Catholic. I said, are you still Catholic? And she said, I'm a Catholic pagan. Or you can say pagan Catholic. But to my opinion, they're the same thing. And she started pointing out all these similarities that they had, the statues and the smudge and the this and that and stuff. So then she was the one that actually proposed this idea that look at through time, we were able to sustain a goddess figure, a goddess energy, despite everything, with Mary. And not just like, oh, if you go there, you can see a statue of Mary. I mean, you drive down the road in France, you drive down the road in Italy, you drive down the road, in so many countries, or here in Mexico, and there's little Marys everywhere. There's more Marys than there's Jesuses. And so that was the ability to hold an energy and a frequency. And that takes a very, very strong being. Not just that it's a person, but even if it's a collective or it's a certain essence or a certain consciousness, that's a strong ass, feminine essence. And then you have other ones too that do the masculine too, that have held on to certain things like Merlin.
So when it comes to pre-Catholic Church, pre-Roman Catholic Church, right? There was Christianity before that. There was Gnosticism was a part of it. And then there was also, obviously many of us on here know that the prostification of Mary Magdalene, right? And where they basically made her look like she was, was saved by Jesus rather than maybe being a counterpart and even his lover and wife. And so it seemed like there was a model, and even Mother Mary, grandmother, gave a virgin birth to Mother Mary. I mean, Mother Mary's mother, Anna, right? Jesus' grandmother had a virgin birth, and his mom, Mother Mary, was also through divine conception.
Well, and you were talking... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I forget what text that's from, but I think it's called Apocryptic text, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you know anything about that?
No, not specifically, but I know I've studied about, probably six different really interesting interpretations of Immaculate Conception, from literal, physical, and so on, to being an alchemical representation of something that happens, And what the Knights Templar were doing is they respected the goddess and they respected the idea of an equal respect in all people. So not just the divine is in everybody, but the balance of sacred masculine and feminine is required, even though they were out being super macho dudes. Okay, right? It was the time and it was required for what they did. But they were really being that sacred masculine in the sense that that builds and holds space and protects for the sacred feminine to come in and create.
Yeah. Right?
And so,
the origins of Christianity before the Roman Catholic Church was that divine union, was that sacred union.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah. And so the Knights Templar, you know, as we're speaking about here, were holding on to those ways, and many other sects as well existed that were doing that, the Cathars. And then, you know, maybe incrementally over time, over the 1,000 years or so since Christianity started, different sects were taken out. But during that time, the 12th, 13th century, it seems like was another reform or a redaction of the actual union of the two sides, making it really unbalanced.
Yeah, there were, you can see the different phases, right? Because as we had our 26,000 year progression, you know, away from the light, and now we're back to it. The Dark Ages weren't the middle medieval times. It's been was way before that, and it's been going on, you know, up till now. And it's just that that means that we're waking up, that we can access these higher states of consciousness, and that the platform of unity, which is the top of the Mayan pyramid, is the wave of consciousness. The ninth wave is unity. Right. So we're reuniting with ourselves, with our truth. We came down and then we worked our way back up. And now we are here to connect that above and below and the masculine and the feminine. And so the Immaculate Conception, one thing that's very interesting is the name Maria or Mary means sea water, means salt, sea salt, sea water. And what happens in alchemy is there are several processes, but one of them is if you do this process to water, seawater, you'll, you know, be pulling off the steam and so on and so forth. But suddenly, as if out of nowhere, the sea salt just appears, right? And it's little cubes. It's little cubes of like a crystal, but it's in the shape of a cube, which is a sacred geometrical shape, which is the core of like the Vitruvian man, the core of understanding, the cube in the circle, and all the cultures that understood those symbols of it's not just masculine and feminine. It's how do you fit the above and the below within it, and how do you draw the true essence out? So if you make flower essences, for example, or something like that, it's a form of alchemy. So there's a lot of sense that they did that to a lot of, I don't know, many, many, many feminine archetypes or historical figures. Like you said, they demonized Mary Magdalene, you know, so the best way to ruin someone is ruin their reputation. So just call her a prostitute and then make sure that everybody through history thinks that that's a bad thing. Right. And so automatically it's connected. And then, oh, she needed a man to save her, you know, type of thing. That, oh, well, Jesus saved her. Jesus was the one that did it. No. Right. Like you said earlier, she actually was married to John the Baptist. And he was meant to carry on this tradition that the Gnostics and the Essenes and those had a much better grasp on, because it wasn't until later they kind of turned it into, you know, Jesus type Christianity that didn't match who he was or the message. And it was normal back then to be married, as we all know now in that culture, to have children. And so she had that. And then when he was beheaded, which we all know, right, they were like, okay, no, we're not putting up with that anymore. Jesus, being a relative, I believe, stepped in and married her. And that again was normal in the culture, and normal if you were going to be a rabbi or a holy man of any kind, of which both of them were, you know, learning to be, right? Becoming. And so the idea that it's specific is more that we have to carry on this lineage. Right, we are here to do this and bring it together. And then that begs to differ a lot about you know, the idea of alchemy is also blood, bloodline, right? You perform alchemy when you make a baby because you're combining two different lineages, two different essences, two different, you know, different kinds of features. And so the idea of pure bloodlines and preserving a bloodline and then realizing that there's a level where we probably all have some of that bloodline. And then to me, that goes again back to that. We need to keep the power, the symbols away. Like in the Indiana Jones movie, right, where the Nazis wanted the Ark so that they could like just go to war and just kill everybody. And there were lots of arcs. I mean, you've been to Egypt. They were carved all over everywhere. Ark, star on the top, stargate, right? Formula of how to do alchemy. People holding little cone-shaped cakes, which is what you get when you alchemize certain substances. And it's an anti-gravitational kind of thing, and it gives out electricity. So what they were interested in, the Emerald Tablets of Hermes or Thoth, because these were Atlantean. They were interested in tracking everything back to Atlantis and then came forward to flying craft, extraterrestrials, describing angels that come down, but certain books that have been hidden of different sacred texts where they describe certain battles and they describe basically what we would call like a UFO or something coming down and sending lightning and shooting down the bad guys or something, or sending messages or a goddess appearing or an angel appearing. And they're even found places in the US where they have these carvings, like the rune stone from Minnesota and stuff like that, that the Templars had. So they knew that they were going to get attacked. They sent most of their treasures. Portugal was created with them as
that
a
was
free
known
state.
As the kingdom of the Templars, right? Portugal.
Yeah. Port Grail, door or port.
Well, that's what it means, huh? That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happened was, is it was like a young king or somebody and they were like, hey, we'll come and we'll do this for you. And he was like, okay, great. Take half the country. It's all yours. Do whatever you want. So it was always a safe place, you know, when they were doing things, moving things around. Then the other place that did protect them was Scotland. And they moved a lot of their treasure there, a lot of their ancient stuff there. And they moved into Nova Scotia and into the Americas. And so, you know, supposedly now they still have a lot of things, which include a lot of arcs and formulas for creating this mana stuff that would be in the arc and create enough electricity to connect all the pyramids around the planet or create an internet to talk to aliens or to give everybody electricity. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's really what they were learning and then protecting.
Right, right. So they had, like, as we're speaking about here, they had some deep belief systems that were against what the church believed. And one of which is they believed in reincarnation, which is interesting because so did the Cathars and so did the Gnostics. That was the core part. And I feel even Jesus coming back is a metaphor for resurrection of the soul and how it's infinite, right? Interesting how it was taken out. And now we have all these relics that we've been told that they kept. And this is where the esoteric meets the mainstream, because the esoteric world, we're like, they had these relics. The mainstream, they're like, they had these relics. And King Philip, after raiding them, went in to all the sites, tried to find it. And there's the stories that they were trying to find the Ark of the Covenant. They were trying to find the Holy Grail. And supposedly, they'd never found it, that it was hidden somewhere. So I think that's a good segue into what is, maybe we can speak about relics now, but the Holy Grail. But before we do that, just for context and for fun, I want to read off the different theories of the Holy Grail is, okay?
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
Then we'll have you speak on it. Okay, so we have, let's see, scroll down here. Okay, obviously, the cup at the Last Supper, it's also believed to have possibly been, and it could actually be multiple things, metaphor for multiple things, the Holy Bloodline, right? So Yeshua's bloodline, a lost chalice, some sort of symbol of spiritual enlightenment. You know, some people, this one's not listed here, some people think that the Holy Grail is actually the pineal gland. The Philosopher's Stone, some alchemical traditions equate the Holy Grail with the Philosopher's Stone, a celestial object from off-planet, a portal or a gateway, a device for a portal or a gateway. In Arthurian legend, the Holy Grail is often depicted as a mystical object with miraculous powers sought by after the knights of the Round Table. Then we have a symbol of kingship. Holy Grail symbolizes legitimate kingship and divine right to rule. A feminine symbol. Some interpretations view the Holy Grail as a symbol of the divine feminine, representing the womb, fertility, and nurturing aspects of the divine. And then the Gnostic theories, a Gnostic symbol, Holy Grail is sometimes seen as a symbol of hidden knowledge and the divine spark within each individual. So that could be the third eye too, emphasizing the inner journey towards enlightenment. And then also a Christian relic, some sort of other thing that's a relic from ancient Christian times. And then modern, this is what they say, modern and conspiracy theories, an ancient technology. Some modern theories often found in fringe and conspiracy literature suggest that the Holy Grail is a piece of ancient technology with unknown powers potentially linked to lost civilization of Atlantis, a code or cipher. Another theory is that the Holy Grail is a code or cipher containing hidden knowledge or a secret message possibly embedded in religious texts or ancient monuments. So the reason why I wanted to do that is just to show like the speculation of 2,000 years of these stories and how it is permeated in so many different worldviews. So Nan, today, guys, we're going to know exactly what the Holy Grail is. Nan, tell us what it is.
Well, it's a little bit of a lot of the things you mentioned, which is interesting, right? When you're looking to discover something, you find clues or you find little pieces of it, or your awareness is at a level that you can understand one part but not another, and that. But the Knights Templar are supposed to have it. They are supposed to have it in the U.S. somewhere. They have vaults throughout the U.S. full of a lot of arcs and a lot of other treasures, symbols, and gold. And they really understood that gold was able to fund a war, but it was really for alchemy, because you could produce a substance where they were like, with, they were very good, friendly with the Gnostics, the Essenes, with a lot of cultures in other parts of Europe and Islam and Muslim and Native American, because they recognized that divine spark in everybody. They went through, and so they supposedly have this actual cup. Now, some people say it was used at the Last Supper, and some people say it caught the blood of Christ from the, you know, from the cross. And it's more likely that it is a cup that was involved before this, that it holds one, the chalice, okay, the chalice and the blade. You have the sacred masculine and feminine. We're going to be in Glastonbury, and the top of the Tor, which used to be the goddess hill of Avalon, right, was then the Michael's monastery. And all that's left is that is this tower. And when you look from above, you see people have mapped out the energy, the Michael and Mary lines as they come up. And the Druids call it a labyrinth, that it winds up the hill. And then at the top forms a perfect chalice, the Mary line, and then the Michael line comes directly in it. And so it's like it ends, and the tower is right there. So this is channeling certain energies. And there's a lot of people who say that Joseph of Arimathea came and threw the grail underneath the Tor, right, under in Avalon too. So that idea. And then it really, what is the chalice? Well, it's your kundalini again. It's your ability to directly connect to life force, to create, man, woman, doesn't matter. It's your ability to communicate and open up these channels and to you know, one of the reasons they wanted to alchemize gold was to drink things like, I think it's called communion in church, when you like drink blood and and eat body of Christ or something. it would produce a red blood-like liquid. But if you drank it, it was like super vitamins, you know? You kept vital. Pharaohs lived to be 150, 250 years old because of their knowledge of how to turn it into a white cake or a powder, which would perform the things we talked about with the electricity, but also perform health, rejuvenation of the body to renew over and over. And so if you drink from such a cup, if you think about, if you hold that essence, that energy, that wisdom within you, and those codes are within you, and it's a sacred geometrical shape called a Genesa crystal. That's a patented name, but that looks like this. It's not, the little holes in it aren't. And this is what your eight original cells look like when they formed here. And it's still at the base of your spine, at the bottom of your umbilical cord. And it holds your soul blueprint. And then it's held inside this chalice of your hips, right? And so you've got all these different references saying, what are we coming back to? I think that the spiritual, the energetic, the metaphorical, the esoteric in the end is the real energy and meaning behind it, is that idea that you're seeking what you already have. You're seeking who you are. You're seeking who you created yourself to be. And it's time to unplug from everything else, right? And start to go within. And when you discover that, you are the blade, you are the focus, you are that masculine energy that finds your creative source and brings it to life. And so if you have any kind of, you know, ritual, and you have, I have like full moon water, I have solstice water that I put out for the moons and things to create. And then I might drink it, I might pour it here, I might, you know, use it in different ritual. You can program it. So imagine what you could do, even if this was a cup somebody made and just the intention was, this is the Holy Grail. And what does it hold? It holds what everyone is looking for. It holds the answers, and it holds the answers, and you get to put your hands around it and program what's in it and drink from that. So it has a monetary value if they own it. I'm sure that some of the symbols on it probably have some interesting information, right? And then there's the whole idea that within your own chalice, within this concept, you could go somewhere like to Glastonbury where there's two springs, and now there's waters that heal you, and they're in the chalice, and there's the quest. And so underneath that is the quest. Yeah. There's a thing called the questing beast. I never knew this before. I guess it was part of the King Arthur thing. And that it was like a weird beastie, you know, thing that was made of a bunch of different monsters. And it would appear whenever like the Knights of the Round Table or somebody didn't have something to go search for, because you need a quest. So if you are on the quest for the Holy Grail, which is what is your truth? What is your wisdom? What is your gold? What is your, you know, what is that thing that you're here to do? What is that promise? And if it has everything within there, you're on a quest. And then you do what? You go out, you meet people, you learn things, you fall apart, you come back together, you go through the hero's journey, you go through the whole idea of it. And going to Glastonbury in and of itself is part of that quest.
You know, as I've been researching ancient civilizations, you know, many different ones, but I would say definitely the Sumerians, the Egyptians, the Old Testament, I'm realizing that a lot of these stories are metaphorical and literal at the same time.
Yeah.
And what is metaphor? Metaphor is the creative flow. What is literal? That is the analytical flow. What is the creative flow? The feminine, analytical, the masculine. So if you really look at the way they're conveying these things, they're literally coming from both hemispheres, masculine and feminine, simultaneously, that they're able to creatively express in poetry scientific understanding of who we are on the deepest levels. Great example I love to give is the Eye of Horus, cross intersection of the pineal gland, but the most beautiful piece of art, representing mystery school and so much more, and science and the musical octaves in there, everything, right? Yeah. And I think you can understand how far back this awareness goes when you look at it from the angle of, are they being literal and metaphoric at the same time? Right. And that's what's going on with the Holy Grail, it seems. So did the Holy Grail have an oil in it too? Is that part of the story as well, that there was like an oil in the Holy Grail, or what was inside it supposed to be?
Well, it was mainly associated with the Last Supper, which would be that if he drank from that, his DNA would be in there, right? And is that something that passes on the ability to be reincarnated, or is that the ability to be resurrected? Because he was trained in that, you know, he and Mary and Mother Mary, both Marys, they went through training. You know, they went to Egypt, they went to Tibet, they went to these places, and they were priestesses and priests, and they were trained in these ancient ways so that they could go through this experience in the physical, because it was to show you, guess what? You're not physical, right? You're just here to do this. And so we form things, we create form, and then we come into form, and then we get lost in form and forget that we're the creator, that we're the life force within the form. We're not the form. But the form comes from your metaphor, your spirit, your life force, your imaginings, your visionings, your creative force. And we're here to create worlds. We're not here to pay bills and worry about getting a speeding ticket. Do that too. But, you know, is it the reason we're here? It's absorbing all that energy, right? So I don't know about an oil, but I do know that that was that the idea of anointing, you know, the third eye was very sacred in the ancient traditions. And what is this? This is the pituitary, right? You have the pineal back here, and you have the whole cross section of the brain you were talking about. That's the eye of Horus, and it's called the Wajet. And then what happens is that this is this the snake goddess is the masculine energy coming out of the third eye, projecting into the world, creating form. And this winged goddess here, Nekhbet, she represents spirit coming down. You know, Isis always had those wings over her head, right? And that spirit coming down, injecting in through the pineal, right, into that awakening, the thalamus, the hypothalamus. These are all glands, right? There's your pituitary, pineal. This is the corpus callosum, really? The thalamus, and everything. Oh, yeah. This is the cross-section of the brain where the two halves meet. And we've seen it on everything, right? You've been to Egypt. I mean, Lord, it's everywhere, right? It's also encoded on Mona Lisa's forehead in the Da Vinci painting of it and stuff. So this is part of the alchemy. We are bringing spirit down into form, running it through us. And when we awaken all of that, and we open the antenna, and we open the eye, and we have the balanced force coming up from the kundalini through all of the chakras, now we are true creators. And that's the whole point, that caduceus. That's the point of alchemy. That's the point of us being here, not to be slaves, but to be creators, generating force, generating life force. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Every being that becomes sentient wants to create, I feel, you know, creating it. And it's like the original spark of source, creating in my own image. We all want to create in our own image, and we're doing that. Are you familiar with the claustrum? Have you heard of that term before, the claustrum?
It sounds familiar. Tell me what you're talking about.
I might picture a little bit of this because it's been a while since I watched the video. So I recommend people just typing in Christ oil and watching the video on that. Oh, and basically, Christ, there's a part of our brain close to amygdala that's called the claustrum. And it excretes an oil that's basically the lubrication oil that goes down our spine that helps conduct the electricity from our brain to our spine to activate our nerve centers that then fuel our organs to be awake and alive, which are also in the same exact areas as the chakras, right? And so the Christ oil, the anointing of the oil, is actually a representation of the claustrum oil that goes down our spine, activating our chakras. And then also, this is a whole other conversation that I'm going to do in Christmas for my annual Pagan Origins of Christmas presentation. Ooh. But the Klaus from Santa Claus comes from claustrum. Santa Claus going down the chimney is a representation of the oil going down the spine.
I have heard that. Yes.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Another amazing metaphor is, so these metaphors aren't even just face value. They're so deep and layered. It's just insane to think about the creativity of these people.
It
Not only
is,
that,
and
it's like they're thinking multidimensionally, really, is what it is.
it's multidimensional. You can look at it one way, and then you suddenly wake up to something and come back and see it another way, you know? And I always saw it, and I would go to the British Museum growing up and be like, oh, look at that pretty thing, you know? And then I started going through ancient mystery schools of ancient Egypt and realizing what these things meant. And you know that you're meant to embody the pyramid, and these are these different things that happen. Yeah, and that oil you're talking about is amazing because it was considered like gold, right? Like gold oil, and it's that awakening oil. When oh, I'd say about 38 years ago, when I first kind of woke up to whatever the spirituality or whatever you want to call it, it was the idea of looking for a solution that would fix the problem, that would make me not feel pain anymore. And then it became another problem, and then another problem. And then, you know, oh, I want to hear my higher self now, or I want to have visions, or I want to start talking to Syrians, or, you know, like that going along. And all the masters I worked with originally said almost everyone on the planet at that time had their pineal hardened and shrunken and fallen over like that. And that's, you know, different things and fluoride and food and stress and other stuff that we've done. But that's, again, what you're talking about is that ability to rejuvenate. That is the ability to resurrect. That is the ability of everlasting life, eternal now life. Because the Emerald Tablets, which apparently the Knights Templar have as well, you know, was one of the first Atlantean texts about life and living and continued life and working with the flower of life and the fire life, flower of fire, and the different aspects of going into the earth to certain places to rejuvenate. And this really is one of the keys that you're talking about, is doing your spiritual work, your toning, your, you know, vibrational, your energy work. You will get to where not only will your pineal wake up and open up and glow and do all that great stuff, but yeah, releasing that, which would be like the most valuable drug you could ever buy. Very much so. Again, I think
Yes.
it goes in the
All
category
right.
of gold.
Yeah, no, it was really important. It was also known by the Greeks. It was known by ancient civilizations. The video I watched shows how far back it went that they were aware of this. So it was just passed down, you know. And Christianity, a lot of the information there was passed down from the ancient world. You know, as I was growing up, I was told that monotheism and polytheism both grew independently from each other and had no crossover. When I realized that one was just stacked on top of the other, and it was actually a selection of one God over the many, and the little Yahweh said, "You will choose me over everyone else," you know. And so it was just like they just chose one of the powerful ones. Little side note here, which is kind of connected but a different topic as well, is that Yeshua translates to Yahweh's salvation, okay? But it actually doesn't mean Yahweh, that possibly translation. It could actually mean salvation from Yahweh,
I think that's what
meaning
it
that
means.
instead of building on top of Judaism, it was a new covenant moving away from. Because if you, I've been reading this Eden Conspiracy by Paul Wallace. I just interviewed him 3 hours on it. Oh my God, the Old Testament? No wonder why people do all these atrocities to people in the name of God. Because look what God did to humans. Oh, you. King David, you counted your army to see if you can go and fight this war because you might have less people. How dare you disobey me? You should not have counted your army. 20,000 of my people dead now, overnight. That's what
Yeah.
Yahweh did. You know what I'm saying? And when you look at that as a template, and then you project it onto all these other religions, you start doing all types of things, and the society is built on that. You know? So
Well, and they
it's
had their
pretty.
fight with the people awakening, right? The people who had their rituals, their alchemy, their, you know, pagan rituals of any type, you could call it, and just means peasant or country or earth-based. And the idea that you don't need the church right, too, for that. And it's the masculine energy as it rose as a frequency within the earth. We have these fluctuations within the earth. And so as that going more away and the intuitive shrinking and the masculine coming up, well, where's Yashira? She's the consort. She's the perfect partner of Yahweh. But you don't hear in that particular culture, in that particular tradition, you don't hear much about her, because that idea of wanting to be the conqueror, you know, being the one that said, no, you will only see me, you will only do what I say. All right. There's even the idea that Moses was, you know, the tablets or whatever he got. These were carved symbols, recipes to take and to melt gold into these different things to create electricity, to create, you know, food, to create rejuvenating life force. And so it's almost like getting from that source, but like we've been talking about the Knights Templar, but understanding that for that force, it, if it's out of balance, has its own agenda. All right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So let's segue now. And I think a good closing from this would be to talk about dragons. I just want to mention what Joshua was saying here. So what I'm reading, Joshua, just to, because he says that, you know, Yeshua means the Lord is my salvation. So I was reading Paul Wallace's book, and then I started doing more research on the root of these words. And there actually is no word for my Lord in these texts. None of the original texts had my Lord in it. And however, by the time it went into translation into the New Testament, we started using an old word for powerful one. A powerful one was the original word, and Yahweh was one of it into the Lord. And so it was very it's interesting just looking at the roots of it all. So we need to, in Paul Wallace's book, he speaks to some pastors and he's trying to talk to them about this and say kind of what I just shared right now. And they, you know, first of all, couldn't fathom it. So he convinced them to, instead of taking out and putting in the new words, use the original words and reread everything from the original word. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then the whole new understanding manifests. But my personal opinion is that it was not a continuation of Judaism and the new covenant of Judaism. It was a whole new doctrine for planet Earth. You know what I'm saying? But we've connected the two as if it was a continuation, but I feel it was a new covenant, as it should be, right?
They need to do that. You know, when you conquer a culture, you take on their holidays. So when you take over the Celts and they have, you know, the goddess day, for Brigid, the goddess, you make up Saint Bridget. You know, you just say, oh yeah, okay, I'm not going to get to stop you wanting to, you know, do something for a woman on that day. So we'll just make, oh, we have Saint Bridget. And so, yeah, that's how you get people to settle into the new thing. Just give them some new verbiage for it.
Yeah. All right. So, dragons, Nan, take it away.
Well, dragons is such a big topic, isn't it? So how fun to think about dragons. Do they directly relate to the Knights Templar or the Holy Grail? Well, they definitely relate to the Holy Grail. They're all over England. They're, you know, you have the dragon lines, you call them, they, you know, they're big in China, but England actually has, I think, more lore that's still remembered, that's beloved. We were talking about the quest for the Holy Grail in the beginning. It's so captivating. Even back when we thought it was just a bunch of men running around in armor and there was no other meaning to it, right? It's just so romantic. And there's this idea of that. And yet you have the dragons that they were always turned into something evil, something you had to fight, something you had to set. And then all the statues across Europe of Archangel Michael or Saint George, you know, standing on the dragon, stabbing the dragon, killing the dragon. And the idea being, again, that masculine over feminine energetic dominance, the authority of the church or the government or whoever over you as an individual, your ability to wake up that. And the dragon energy was so well loved that, again, you had to turn it bad. So always seeing the dragon as something big and strong and evil and, you know, blowing fire and killing people and everything. And then if you think about it, well, wouldn't you be kind of crabby like that too if everybody was always accusing you of being bad and you weren't? So, but the dragon energy in Glastonbury is mind-boggling. They have a red and a white dragon based on the springs, based on the ley lines, based on the red dragon, the Pendragon of Arthur. It has a lot to do with the quest, and it has a lot to do with that idea of chivalry or honor, or being a part of a round table, which has a whole other metaphor meaning too, right? That whole idea of we're equal again, we're at a round table, we're sitting together. And they even bring these dragons out when they go down the road, do little parades with them and everything in Glastonbury. It's absolutely charming. But I think that the dragon is a form of divination. It's a messenger, it's a protector of treasure, and it's a protector of gold, and therefore of the grail and the things that you seek. And it's protecting you and your life force and your secrets from those that would wish to control that or take that or extinguish permanently your connection to that. So I believe that the dragons are back now in such a powerful way because that part of us is waking up, and we don't have the belief anymore at the level of hatred of kill everything else, you know, turning Mary Magdalene into a whore and turning Medusa into a monster, turning, you know, Morgan Le Fay, you know, from the Lady of the Lake and the, you know, priest, high priestess of Avalon and all this stuff into an evil sorceress. This is
even Lilith, right? Lilith too, from the Bible.
What?
Lilith from the Old Testament.
Oh yeah, Herodes. Lilith. Yeah, Lilith, the first woman, the first wife, you know. No, I'm out of here. I don't want to play that game. Go find Eve. No. Go make Eve.
All right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I remember when I first learned about Lilith, I'd never heard of her, of course. And I was in the goddess world, and then it wasn't, you know, there wasn't all these goddess, there was no internet, there wasn't all these cards and all this stuff that you could just look up and understand it, or people weren't talking about Black Moon Lilith, you know, which is an astrological sign and energy. But now there's that understanding of, isn't that interesting, the multiple facets of both the masculine and the feminine of creator, right? Yeah. You have Kali, you need Kali. Come in and cut everything down, right? And then you have Kuan Yin to come in and hold everyone in compassion. And so you have the dragons, and you have the dragon is not always masculine. It tends to be seen that way. But if you have your dragon on your side, if you have your guardian dragon on your side, or if you waken that dragon within you, the other day we did a guided transmission in my mastermind. And at the end, this dragon came and crawled right in our sacral and curled up around that Genesa crystal, you know, our original cells in there, just like you see them, you know, around a hoard of gold, you know, painted to be greedy, you know, and interesting to be like, well, they hoard things, they steal your treasures. No, they're protecting them.
Yes.
The same way the Knights Templar were really protecting us.
Right, right, right. So Lauren is mentioning Glastonbury Conference sounds good. So before we continue here, I just want to make an announcement while we're in the middle of this, that we've been speaking about Glastonbury a lot in and out of this conversation here. And that's in East England. It's like the metaphysical center of, I would say, almost probably Europe when it comes to like the amount of consciousness there, type of people there, the ancient pagan ways. And it's so interesting too, because not only was it that area the last stronghold of the Druidic and Celtic ways, but it still actually is the last stronghold of the metaphysical ancient ways. And it felt so good to go to the pre-Christian world of Europe, right, and be immersed in that, because Europe doesn't have that energy about it anymore. And it's like you're stepping back in time when you go to Glastonbury. And we're going to be there as a second annual conference, AscensionGlastonbury.com, September 26th to 28th. You can come earlier. We have a tour before. We have a tour after. We have post-conference workshops. if you're interested, ascensionglassbury.com. And you can also sign up for the live stream if you are not able to attend live, but it'd be great to see you guys there. All right, so, you know, back to the Dragon. It's, to me, it's always been interesting, you know, the East and the West division of it all. And I even spoke about it in my presentation last year for the Dragons. And we, in the West, we have slaying the Dragon. And I've seen some theories on it that basically they were saying that the Kundalini energy is not to be messed with because it's so strong. So this is like the positive outlook on it. It's so strong that they're saying you got to keep your Kundalini in check.
Yeah.
Slaying the Dragon. And then the other, which could have been the way it started, and the fall from grace continued. And then it became like, let me not allow them to activate their dragons. And, you know, again, referring to Paul Wallace again, so in his book, he outlines the time the shift happened from the positive dragon stories on the planet to the negative dragon stories on the planet. Mm-hmm. That was 700 BCE. There was a shift in the world. So it was very interesting, which actually, if you look at the Yuga cycles, the flow mm-hmm. of the Yuga cycles, 700 BCE is when we fell from the Dwarpa to the Kali Yuga as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, that's also the monotheization of Judaism. Before that, Judaism was a polytheistic religion, and they actually had another god, another powerful one called Asherah.
Yeah.
And she was actually the god of the Pleiades in that time. Yeah. So it was like, all of these stories are interconnected on some deep level.
Yeah, definitely. And Joshua was saying about the dragon lines and the ley lines. And yeah, the ley lines that are pretty famous in Glastonbury is they're called dragon lines commonly. And you might know about that they go straight kind of over to France, but they go straight across the bottom of England.
To Egypt too, right? Is it from Egypt to France too?
There's one theory that they connect, but they're all over the planet. The interesting thing, though, is that the dragon lines, to me, are, again, that structure. They're that strong. Think about dragons. They can be water. They can be air. They can be fire. What's a fire dragon? They can breathe fire. It can eat fire. It can live in fire. That gives you a certain power, right? It gives you a certain affinity to a certain element, to a creation, to the ability to create in a certain way. And then you have what we talk about a lot, or what Glastonbury talks about a lot, is the Mary and Michael lines.
Yeah.
Well, they aren't lines. The lines are the ley lines, and the Michael and Mary are currents, and they do this. And they do this back and forth across that central line. So your dragon being your Kundalini or your spine or your central channel, right? Which you see, you release it and it comes up in a balanced way, activating each chakra, feeds in the heads of the snakes, feeds in to open the third eye, and then the wings open of the pineal and up rises that antenna, right? If you have that, and then the Michael and Mary lines are doing this, you have the exact manifestation in the earth right there where we're walking of that activation of your own ley lines, your own meridians, your own Kundalini, life force, all of that. And it's really fascinating because it's the currents that generate the power. So the ley lines are the strength, the earth, the elemental, that really powerful line that holds a structure. And what they found was that, they built way back ancient peoples carved things along those lines. And then somebody built temples along those lines, and somebody put cathedrals along those lines. And they find all the different sacred things built along those lines. And they converge in Glastonbury and Avebury in this area in such a profound,
so powerful,
interesting way.
Yeah, the feeling, the energy there is literally tangible. You can feel it, all that energy converging. So, and you just shared again how this is basically literal and also also a metaphor, but also a literal occurrence of what's within us. These ley lines, our own energy centers reflected throughout the dragon within, the dragon ley lines, like, it is really, on the deepest level, a straight science, because this is quantum reality, and all of the way our bodies are made up inside is how the earth is made. The earth is not only paradoxically our birth mother, it literally birthed our soul into this reality, but it is also a reflection of our own internal world. Like, it becomes what we are, and it, it's just so beautiful the way that this tapestry is weaving together. You know, when it comes to the dragons now, I just want to say as well that for me, I mean, obviously we spoke about how there's so many different purposes for this energy, but it also represents the underworld. And my journey with the dragons was the underworld birthing centers, if you will, with the dragons. And what's happening now is that, as I like to say, is that we can't go into this next reality with our baggage from this dimension. And the only way to do that is to bring things out to the surface. And a representation of that is shadow work, Saturn work, dragon work, serpent work, underworld energy, you know? So right now, the underworld is being exposed, coming to the surface. And it's almost like, here you go, guys. This is everything. And a lot of this stuff is crazy and a lot of atrocities here. And your complete belief system, if you choose to believe and not just stay in ignorance, will be shattered because look at what's been going on behind the scenes and how the world really works. Are you ready to deal with it? And for me, that's what's happening right now. 2 years of serpent energy, you know? And then, as you said, one is that the masculine side of it and one is the feminine side. So there's the balance there again.
Yeah. Well, you came to the Mayan land and you can't really spend a lot of time here without getting that whole sacred serpent and dragon energy awakened. Right. And then it's all about shed. Shed is Kukulkan's just always there next to me. Shed, shed, literally, you know, what do you need to shed to release the power, the light, the understanding that you're meant to bring in? And if you, you know, we're going to see the dragon become a more and more powerful in our culture and in the mind. And with the creation speed, you know, happening at exponential rates now, you also have that ability for you to see or feel something and create it very quickly. So I'm glad that you made the comment about, you know, the idea that you need to be the angel keeping your kundalini under control. It's not that you have to suppress it anymore, but there was a time that you did, or it meant death, right? It meant that you're too smart, you're too wise, you're too psychic, you're too something for that. And I find the number one energy that I love with the dragons is that protective energy that they have, that guardian kind of energy that they have, almost like a, you know, guardian angel, that they're saying, you know, we're guarding the treasure. We're here to help you. We're going to stay with you. You're safe so you can step out into the world, you know. And it does come back to, are you on a quest, you know, for your truth? And the Knights Templar representing the idea of protecting the pilgrim on your journey, and yet at the same time with a secondary purpose underneath, let's go dig deep within you and find the sacred texts. Let's find the vaults. Let's find the wisdom that is in your soul lineages and in your spiritual DNA and ready to wake up right now. And you don't have to wait. You could manifest something overnight. I'm starting to levitate in bed. It's the weirdest thing. My arms were last night. So, yeah.
I got to see this.
Yeah, I did. Well, I had surgery on my eyes, and I had one, and then it was about 3 weeks later I had the other one, and in between I couldn't really see because they were different. I had epic headaches. I wasn't supposed to go outside. I live on the beach, all this stuff. So I started to consume a lot of, you know, information and talk and do a lot of, I'm a channel and an oracle and all that, and I travel and talk to all these different beings. And I said, decided, well, I'm going to take my meditation practice up. So I've started doing 4 hours a day. I would do 2 in the morning and 2 at night. And I started combining different ones, ones I do in my intuition class or ones for certain kinds of healing. And then I always follow it as I'm in bed with one where you kind of leave your body and you go in into the infinite field. So that's where I'm going when I dream. And I've been doing it now for like a month, all of this intensity. And a few of the times in the last week or two was I would just hit replay on the music to play another. I did 2.5 hours of the same one because I was going out in the infinite field and then, you know, all this stuff. And there's the door to enter this new reality, and I was never going through it, and I wasn't frustrated. I was just like, cool. And the one time I was just sucked right through it, and I was standing in front of myself, my huge, enormous light being self. And so then, you know, it ended, and I was like, no. I turned on the music again, and it kept going and going, and was getting past that, becoming one with it. I could feel the shape-shifting, the transmutation in my cells and my DNA. It was like, and then my arms started rising up off of my, you know, they were laying kind of on my belly and my legs, and they were like, they were flying. So yeah, a lot of fun things going on. I've got my dragon in there,
and it's just the beginning. There's so much going to happen right now.
Yeah, it's just so the beginning happen. Yeah, because we're going from awakening, we're going from the new age, which was like, really, if I think positive, will good things happen, you know, to awakening, you know, which is a constant kind of a spiral process. But now I really believe, especially if you don't have to have done this for 40 years, but you have, if you're at that point with the desire, right, with your focus on that inner wisdom of freeing your mind and becoming, you know, going back to connect with your true inner wisdom, your authority, the other lives that you've had, that, you know, where you were a priest or here or there, whatever mm-hmm. it was, is to reconnect to that in a way that's practical, that's is with you in your day-to-day life. And that's how you would change, you create a new reality. So if you have the desire, you could just wake up yesterday and say, oh, what is this weird stuff you're talking about? Mm-hmm. But it's that readiness, it's the ripeness, I guess, right?
Yes, exactly.
Of being so, in that place.
I think a good way to close this would be to call in the dragons, Nan, if you would like to do that. And I'll do my last announcements. I'm going to give you full screen. And then if you want to just close this out with whatever you feel called to bring in.
Let's do dragons. All right,
so everybody, so this is it for me. Nan's going to take over in a second here. I just want to say I love you all. And check out ascensionglastonbury.com. Tune into ascensionglastonbury.com. Tune into the live stream or come in person. And then also, if you're new to Portal to Ascension, please go ahead and subscribe. But if you want to get access to hundreds of hours of presentations for free, go to portaltoascension.org, sign up there. You'll get a username and password. And our website is like Netflix, YouTube for consciousness presentations. There's 10,000 hours of presentations there, but there's like a few thousand hours for free on all types of topics. Literally name a topic, guys, it's probably on there. And we have so much more coming out. So go ahead and check it out. Sign up on our website. And love you all. So, Nan, it's all yours. Take us away.
Thanks, sweetie. Woo! Yeah. So make sure you come and join us. This is a super magical place, okay? Super magical place. Just going there is delightful. What I like is you can express yourself in Glastonbury. You can walk down the street with fairy wings on if you want. You can be a druid. You could be a knight. And everywhere you go, you're going to be carrying and awakening your key codes. So thank you so much, everybody. This has been really fun. Great presentation. Thank you, Pearl. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you, Laureen. Thank you, Joshua. Thank you. Oh my gosh. Thank you guys, all of you so much for being here. So let's go ahead and collectively, we've been in this sacred space for a while. I never go anywhere, even online, without creating sacred space. So we've been in that. You've been in here with me. So you can take a deep breath in and come into the present moment and just release and allow yourself. Ooh, very good. And I've recently been really liking rubbing my belly. So you might want to connect to the body. And our purpose is to be in the body and to realize we aren't the body, right? To be in the body, to enjoy the body, and then to change what the body is doing, what it's radiating, free ourselves from those beliefs. So go ahead and rub your belly, take another deep breath in. Now watch it, sense it, feel it. Does it have a color, a smell, a tingle, a heat, a temperature? Let it come out over your head. And when you release it, like a beautiful fountain. Thank you. Thank you, Pearl. So Pearl, I think someone here is named Pearl, but there's a Pearl dragon here and blowing up right through us out the crown. Looks like soft, almost like a fabric, you know, that's been cut to look like flame, just very soft, silky energies coming out and around. So we're here in this sacred space, and we give thanks. We give great thanks to the dragons, to the Knights Templar, to these secrets that are being revealed, to this understanding that we have within us, this divine life force that has the codes, has the wisdom, has everything. We're here on a fully funded mission, and we know exactly what it is that we are meant to do as we are waking up that is already within us. So just rub your belly, come down, and then stop and let your palm be right over your navel. And this is a very important point. It's a little bit like your Dan Chen. A lot of people leak energy here because you don't know your position. And the dragon, this is so cute. They're just showing up. It's like, woo, 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 sort of like coming, 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 party, party, party. So as the dragon energies are coming into our sacred temple, into our sacred space, we really are in Glastonbury. We are here. We're in Avalon. And it seems like that we aren't on the tour, that what we are doing here is more in the Abbey. And the Abbey was built on sacred temples, of course. And there are earth energies that represent the chakras in here that lead you to the Mary Chapel, to the Chapel of the Woman, of the Sacred Feminine. And the dragons are asking us to come here. So to take one more deep breath in, and you're going to have a dragon escort come in and bring you very gently from wherever you are through time and space into this place. And we're all going to come together and land right here in Glastonbury in Avalon. You can smell the apple trees. There's an orchard right here. You can feel the soft grass and the green. Ah, that incredible life force that's here. And you can feel the sacred stones and the ley lines and the currents and the Mary energies and the Michael energies. And they're all right here as you're coming in. You can feel the ancient Celts. You can feel that wisdom of the spiral, the wisdom of the waters underneath, just right over here near us, the white spring, the red spring. All of these sacred energies now are pulsing. As you come in, you are like a piece in the picture, a piece in the puzzle. And we're standing here near a lake. And now the dragon energies that brought you here separate into multiple dragons. And it's almost like a party. There seems to be dragon energy around us, seem to be gathering in different areas here. And now they're forming a star, looks like an eight-pointed star. And we are being surrounded within this sacred star, or Venus, is the divine sacred feminine. And the dragons are bringing this sacred star. And we have been in the gateway of Sirius, the star of Isis, the star of the spiritual sun, the star that brings us these beautiful energies. So just allow all of these sacred energies from above and below in the earth start to vibrate. And you feel now that the spiral energies are starting to slowly move and become the dragon energies moving beneath you. The stone dragons, the dragons of the caves, the dragons of the crystals, the dragons of the waters, the oils, the earth, the roots, all of these dragons, like nature spirits, like devas, there are dragon energies for each of these elements. Now coming quickly towards us, you can sense the red dragon line, the bloodline, the royal bloodline, the bloodline of divinity that you brought with you, regardless of who you are, regardless of your lineage and your DNA in this body or any other body. It's coming fast. It's coming across the world. It's coming out. It's coming out from deep, deep, deep within Gaia. It's coming and pulsing. It's almost like filling the veins of Gaia once again, bringing this life force back. The red dragon is soaring and tunneling and moving like lava, absorbing everything, igniting everything, moving towards you, moving towards you. And here we are inside of this star. We're standing in the abbey, and the red dragon arrives, appears. It's like that current soared through up and down all kinds of pathways to get here. And now comes to our circle and begins to pour in. And this divine blood line, this divine life force that is you, that is what you came here to be, is ignited and pouring into your veins, pouring into your chakras, pouring into every level of your being. This is bringing you back your true blood, your true wisdom, your true codes. The red dragon stands very, very tall now, showing that through time and through space, I have protected you. I have kept you safe. Through time and through space, I have followed you. You know that I have been there. We've gone in dreams. We've done our work. I always remind you that you are royal blood, that you are the blood of the divine. And encoded in your very blood are wisdoms and secrets that it is time for you to awaken. Come to Avalon. Come to the sacred places. Come to the stones. Come to the waters. Allow yourself to awaken that heart and open deeper and deeper and deeper within you. Now the well of the red dragon within you is rejuvenated. You begin to produce your own red elixir of life. It's moving up and down. It's moving in and out. It's awakening your meridians, balancing everything within you. The red dragon. I will not leave your side. This is a year where you need a blood transfusion. You need to remember what you do not remember. You forgot. There's many reasons why you forgot. That's why we are here. We did something similar to what you spoke of. We hid when the ravages of control and the disdain for the magic realms and the subtle realms and the co-creation with the fairies and this, all the beautiful nature, we simply became invisible to you like the mists of Avalon. We're still here. We still work. We still play. We still sleep. We still create this elixir to rejuvenate your blood. And guess what? Even more, I have been with you through every life you have ever embodied on this planet. I've held your bloodline through different bodies, different cultures, different eras, different times, all throughout. I am here and I have awakened you. And I know that this is the time for you. As you will know that you hold this blood within you, your own chalice. You have several chalices within you. I loved the discussion of what is it? It is the quest, because it is the chalice within the mind, within the vision. It is that quest for that holiness within you, for that divinity within you, for the gold that you are, that you know that you can transform, that you can consume, that you can digest, that you can distill, and that you can create from. It is the chalice in your heart, because the cup of your heart was broken open. We all consumed too much and it broke. The floods came. We were separated. Now the heart can hold again so much wisdom And that wisdom can grow and be nurtured. And within that chalice in your heart, you can grow and feed. You can send your visions and you can discover yourself. And the chalice within your womb, within your sacred crystal, the seeds of your soul's purpose, the promise, the power, the path, it is there. You do not have a life force without this. And I am here because I've never left your side. Yes, I know all about the angels and all about the animals and the other guides that you have. But if you have not heard me, if you have not listened carefully, there is a dragon in your garden. There is a dragon in your water. There's a dragon whispering in your dreams, ready to take you down to the deepest depths of the sea, out to the furthest star, back through time and space to every place you've ever been. What would happen if you accepted? I will never leave. It's up to you if you choose to ignore me, to no longer see me, to not believe in me. That is your choice. Just know that you have within you the blood of the divine. You are the chosen one. You are the creator of a world that no one else can create. And you're here to uncover it, to decipher it. And we are here. And it's going to be wild and fun, powerful. We ignite fires and burn down old paradigms. We consume until we sleep. We indulge in the beauty of this wisdom that we have not drank from in so long. Beginning to sleep almost around you, the red dragon, the white dragon now coming down the center, very swan-like, very soft and long and beautiful and full of feathers and silky colors and wings that aren't scales. They're luminous. Ooh, they almost remind you of a dragonfly's wing with the essence of magic. The white, the red. These must change place. I am the masculine, I am the feminine. You are the feminine, I am the masculine. This is the time to remember the dual nature of all things, of you and of the divine. And one day the red runs in you and you know that you are the creator. And one day the white light glows from you and you know you are the creator. Now I wish for you to remember something and I'm going to whisper it to you. Listen carefully. Don't listen with your ears. Don't strive with your mind. Lay down all your tools and surrender in this sacred circle. The white and the red, like yin and yang, surrounded by the beautiful green dragon. The gold moves in and out. We hold all the different colors of the ascended masters, of the rays of creation. We hold the colors of the sunset and we hold the harmony of the rainbow. We hold the powers in the waters of the earth and we hold the lava, the steam, the rain, the moon, the stars. Now, You are sitting in this ancient place. In one dimension and time, there's an abbey. In another dimension and time, there's ruins of an abbey. There's a temple. There's healers. There's dragons. There's the lake. There's the chalice, the grail. It floats out over this water like a vision. This is your quest. You are here. Look at your reflection. You turn down and look into the lake. Look into your reflection. Realize, remember, recognize who you are. Oh, yes. So much more than you imagined. So much more. Your reflection is twofold. You see what you are creating, and it is not the truth. And you see what you really are, and it is the truth. The courage of the dragon and the protection, the energy, the wisdom, the timelessness, and the divine communication that is possible through the dragon kingdom, the dragon lines, the dragon wisdom, the dragon lineage. These are now reconnected to you. Feel your heart open to that holy grail, to that divine chalice floating here. Feel the strength, the magic, and the wisdom of the dragons filling you. And open your heart more as it comes to you. Floating, gold and silver spirals, symbols. You see that it holds an elixir just for you, and it enters your heart. You accept and hear the quest has just gone to a new level. Remember, we are here, and you are ready. You are designed for this moment. Draw in a breath. Integrate all you have received, all you have released, what this wisdom, what the flow, what the energies, the colors, the symbols have all awakened and activated within you. Release and relax. I receive with great thanks these dragons, these energies, these memories, this awakening, this wisdom. I thank Mary and Michael and all of the energies of this sacred place. That which I was, that which I am here to become, and I am the pillar, the channel, and the bridge between the two. I accept this quest. I accept the dragon, divine channels of guidance, power, health, and intuition. And I accept the waters, the earth, the ancients, the ancestors, the Fae, Morgan Le Fay, Merlin, Merlin. May all of these energies walk with me as is optimal for my highest good and the awakening, embodiment, and empowerment of my divine, sacred path. The ancestors say the secrets have been revealed. We are one. And so it is. So take your time. If you have the luxury of laying down, and staying in this energy, talking more with these energies. Wow, that's intense, opening my eyes. If there is a message or a current moving through you, acknowledge it, look at it, anchor it, see what it's saying. What is the song? What is the wisdom? What is the picture? What is the image? How do you anchor this? Because there is a circle now that is being opened as we are ready to move in and take this wisdom and knowledge out with us through our lives. But this is unbroken. We are one. We are entangled. We have been downloaded with wisdom. We have been freed from shackles. We have been given codes that we don't know yet what they will do. Sleep with this. Remember before you sleep and come back and repeat this. And join us in Glastonbury. Namaste. May the circle be open yet unbroken. And the wisdom, power, the quest, the acknowledgement of our divine spark, our divine power, our divine wisdom, our divine guides go with us with every breath, every step, every thought, and every act. And so it is.
Ooh, thank you. I love the show. Awesome.
Ah, wonderful, you guys. Fantastic. So remember the everything of all possibility.
I love it. Thank you, Mrs. Jackie.
Laureen, and so it is. Blessings. Thank you. You're so. Thank you to the dragons. I know. I've got my little dragon here. And I've got my little dragon here curled up in my womb, in my sacral. And I invite you to do that. If you like dragons, or even if you haven't worked with them, just invite them. And they're very good at protecting what is valuable. And so they'll take you and show you where you hold your value. And like I said, we did an activation recently in one of my classes where it came and really just curled up, like you would see those pictures of them curled up in a cave, hoarding their gold, which we now know is a powerful element for source, for awakening our higher self, our ability to reach those higher realms as well. So I want to say thank you to Neil. Thank you to Portal to Ascension. Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. And make sure that you come on over. You go to portaltoascension.org. Join up there, find the Glastonbury Retreat, reach out to me if there's anything I can do to serve you. And I hope you come, because I'm going to have all kinds of beautiful artwork. I'm going to have beautiful other magic and readings, and my oracle cards hopefully will be ready by then. And I will be there before and after, showing all kinds of beautiful things that you can do in this area. So if you're called, you definitely want to listen. All right, there it is, ascensionglastonbury.com. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a beautiful and blessed night. Namaste.
Thank you for tuning in to Portal to Ascension Radio. Be sure to check out all the amazing gatherings we have listed on portaltoascension.org that are designed to assist in a collective consciousness shift. Each one of you that signs up gets access to hours of free content. You may also explore our YouTube channel and Instagram at Portal to Ascension. We are the ones that we have been waiting for. And this is the moment for us to realize the potential we all have and begin to create harmony on planet Earth.